The Laura Murphy Show, episode 41.
Welcome to The Laura Murphy Show, the podcast that analyzes financial markets from the perspective of Austrian economics and Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. Listen and learn as your hosts, Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, explain how you can be part of building the 10%.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Laura Murphy Show. I'm one of your hosts, Bob Murphy. With me, as usual, is Carlos Lara. How are things, Carlos, with you?
They're good, Bob. I hope you're doing well.
Yes, indeed. Well, today we're again going to talk about a recent article Carlos had in the Laura Murphy Report because, well, two things. One is, of course, we want you to subscribe, so we're we're giving you little bits and pieces of it so you see how great the thing is. And for all that information, go to laramurphy.com. That's laramurphy.com to get the information both on the Laura Murphy Report and then also for this podcast, which is episode 41. You go there to the podcast tab and get all the information. But before we dive into that, the other reason, of course, is just it's fascinating. And I wanted to have a conversation with Carlos about his article. And I thought, why don't we do it during our taping of the podcast? And that way we'll let the whole world benefit from it. But before we dive into that, we do want to mention for those people in the Nashville area, Brentwood and so forth, I'm going to be back in town in early July. And we're going to have two back-to-back IBC seminars that we put on. So one of them is going to be the evening of July 11th. It's going to be a dinner. So that's July 11th. And then if that doesn't fit your schedule, but you're interested, the next day on July 12th in the morning. So it's going to be a breakfast presentation. And for both of them, it's going to be in terms of elaborating on a particular tax strategy where you can use IBC as a way of cash flow management for making your tax payments. But also, it'll just be a general. If you've never seen us talk about IBC live, this would be a good opportunity if you're in the area. For further information about that, just again, go to the show notes page for laramurphy.com. Go to the podcast, and this is episode 41 you're listening to, and we'll have information there about you know, how you'd register and the full details. Okay, Carlos, so why don't you tell the people what the title of your recent article was and the big picture and why you started to write on this topic.
Okay. Well, Bob, if you'll remember back in April, the April issue of the Laura Murphy Report, I wrote an article about a multimillionaire who lives here in Nashville. And it's an individual that, you know, crossed my path in life back when I was a young man. He was already a very wealthy individual at the time, and when I was doing all my workout situations with businesses and everything, I was constantly running into him because he was on a mission to buy up companies at that point. And I guess he saw me as a person that maybe could lead him to some companies that he might be able to purchase. But anyway, the thing about this gentleman, by the way, his name was Spencer Hayes, and I wrote that article in April. There was one thing about Spencer is that this gentleman, well, first of all, he passed away in March of this year, and that's what made me write the article. But Spencer grew up in poverty and came up in a broken home. But he became an extremely successful businessman, probably the shrewdest businessman that I've ever encountered in my entire life. And when he passed away, he had quite a bit of money. But the thing that I remember most about Spencer was that he was the epitome of positive thinking. In fact, he had perfected the art of positive thinking. Now, I can give you numerous examples about that, but the main point is that when Spencer passed away and I thought about how he was, his persona, I mean, this man never spoke anything negative ever. It was all positive. That led me into a special kind of research that I had never done before. And the further I got into this research, the more fascinated I became with this whole movement, this whole idea of positive thinking. And one of the things that I discovered was that this whole idea actually originated in the 1820s. That's how far back it goes. Now, it's almost like saying that before 1820 in the United States, there was no such thing as positive thinking. When it first came on the scene, it was first known as the New Thought Movement. And it carried on that way through the 30s, 40s, 1850s, 60s, 70s, and all through that period, it became known as mind cure. And it wasn't until the turn of the century that it took on the term positive thinking. And the thing that makes this so unusual, Bob, is that it is a uniquely American phenomenon. In fact, it's entrenched as an American ideology today, and this is fascinating to me.
Well, let me stop you right there. So that's part of the reason I wanted to have you on and talk about this further. Is that phrase really caught my attention? That you were saying what we nowadays might consider to be positive thinking used to be called mind cure, I mean, and this is partly why I liked it so much in the relevance today is that in terms of you see a lot of stuff today where people are like, oh, you know, there's nothing wrong with your body. It's all in your mind. And like the way you know, if you got some ailment, you know, instead of going to all these quack doctors and stuff, we're going to prescribe stuff from big pharma. You just have to, you know, believe you're going to get well. And if you believe it, it'll happen. Is that like, am I on the right track? Is that partly why they were calling it mind cure?
Well, it is. It is. I mean, and what you're speaking of is a lot of what you see today when we think about maybe the extreme forms of positive thinking. But obviously, it was a brand new idea, brand new concept back in 1820. Now, that's where it had its origins. And what I'm really saying here right now as an introduction to this is that it is uniquely American. And even if you stop and ask yourself, Bob, you know, one sure sign that we're positive people in America is that we smile a lot. I mean, you got a great smile. You're always smiling. But, you know, ask yourself, why do we do that? Because we will smile here in America even when we're feeling lousy. When we're depressed, we will smile. And I don't know why that is. Is it because we don't know any other way to be? I mean, is this because we're embarrassed to show a less than optimistic attitude when we're speaking with people? You know, is it pride? Do you think Americans have figured out what the philosophers have been debating over for centuries and now we're just simply happy? We're happy people? You know, this is the kind of thing that I started asking the more I researched this topic. Is that, you know, where's all this come from? You know, it's and this is what the research was showing me is that Americans over the years, you know, have just become positive people. But as you well know, if you really look at the reality, Americans have really no good reason to be as positive as we all claim to be. Because, you know, if you really peer deeply into American life, you see that the reality of American life is actually not very positive at all. I know you're familiar with a lot of the international indexes that are out there that, you know, measure the rankings of, you know, the health and happiness of countries. And there's several of those out there that you can look at. But a lot of what these rankings show is that despite all the, you know, the wealth that the United States has, it ranks very low compared to some other countries. One in particular that I was looking at, out of 140 countries where it is said that the people are the happiest and all of that, you know, the United States was ranking somewhere around 108. And so it suggests that even though the United States has all this material wealth, it really isn't being translated down to, you know, the well-being of its citizens. So it's like the United States has this big gap between the very wealthy and those that don't have any money at all. In fact, after the 2008 financial crisis, I mean, a lot of people dropped down to below the poverty line. So that's obviously one clear example of, well, that's certainly not very positive. It's a pretty depressing reality. And then as I did a little further research, I also found another statistic that proves that we're not doing so well, and that's that Americans take an enormous amount of antidepressants. One particular publication put out by Harvard, the Harvard Health publication, was saying that there's been an increase of 400% since 1988 to 2008 in the taking of antidepressants. It's almost like one in every 10 Americans now is taking a pill of some sort to deal with depression. And so all this says that as a nation, we're not doing very well, either mentally or emotionally. Now, there's more, Bob, but do you follow where I'm coming from?
Well, yeah. So let me respond to those things a bit. So for one thing, I don't want to get a bunch of pushback in the comments when we post this or people emailing me. There are methodological problems with those surveys. Like, you know, ultimately, how do you compare the happiness of one person to another? But, you know, insofar as they go, you know, they ask questions and things. And, you know, that's what Carlos is talking about, that, yeah, we know these measures are imperfect. But even just through casual empiricism, I'm by no means a world traveler or anything, but I'm not Indiana Jones by any stretch. But I've been around, I've been in countries that were fairly poor. And it's not like after my world travels, I went around just saying, you know, the rest of the world is really miserable, but when I come back to the United States, everybody's really happy. And that's certainly not my experience. I think people realize in their own lives that, you know, it's a cliche saying money doesn't bring happiness or whatever. And obviously that doesn't mean, you know, you don't want to have a high material standard of living, but there's plenty of examples. People win the lottery and then you check in with them 5 years later and they're completely miserable, you know, stuff like that. Or even less extreme, that someone takes a new job that pays a lot of money and they're stressed out and they're working long hours, but hey, they got a nice SUV now. And you know, are they happier? No. Or the familiar patterns of people always spend $1.05 for every dollar they earn. And so you're still in debt. It's just now you're in debt on your private jet instead of, you know, your car. So these things are clear. And well, why don't we just get this out on the table, Carlos, for people who may not be as familiar with us. I mean, we're both Bible believing Christians. And so clearly a lot of what you're going to end up saying and my reaction to what you're saying is going to be informed from that perspective. So clearly, I think part of what we're seeing here, I mean, you mentioned that, we Americans are embracing this movement of positive thinking and these self-help gurus and so forth and think yourself well. And look at all the pills they're taking to deal with depression. And I would say, actually, even though I get why you're saying that's ironic, but actually those two things make sense to me. Because in other words, if you did have a people who were struggling with depression, they would turn to all sorts of cures. And, you know, some people turn to pills and other people say, I don't want to go down that road. So let me go to Barnes & Noble and go see if there's a way I can read a book and think my way out of this hole I've dug myself into. So to me, that, you know, it actually, that makes sense that a really depressed society would be the one that would embrace, especially if there is a depressed society that believes in rugged individualism, which of course Americans do, that, no, I got to fix this myself. I don't need help from nobody else, that kind of thing.
Right. Exactly. And I only mentioned a couple of things there, but there's a long list of things that would prove the reality of what goes on in America is not anything to be happy about. you know, at the, you know, one thing we can say, there's a lot of economists running around right now that the whole United States is financially bankrupt, not to mention that so many people are loaded down with debt. So anyway, there's a lot of things that the U.S. faces, depressing statistics. So to get it down to what we're talking about here and what's really at stake is we need to be able to separate, you know, our actual conditions from how we think we should function within these conditions, you see. And of course, this all starts with our thoughts. This is the beginning point of it all. You know, how are we to operate in an environment like this begins with our thoughts. And even, you know, we've always heard Nelson Nash say, you know, at some of his seminars, it's all about how you think. You know, and he keeps repeating it. It's all about how you think, you know. So what I'm saying here is the proponents of the positive thinking, what they're espousing is that thoughts can be trained. They can be trained to, you know, veer away from negative assessments all the time toward more positive positions. Our thoughts can be trained. And not only will this positive thought training make us feel, you know, more upbeat and more optimistic, but it translates into better outcomes. And you see, at that point, a lot of psychologists would certainly agree with that, that if you're constantly filled with negative thinking, well, that's going to lead to negative outcomes. And if you're thinking very positively, you're going to have much better outcomes, especially in the areas that everybody wants, which is better health, more prosperity, and more success in life. But, Bob, here's what's wrong, because it's at this very point that we start to get just a tiny bit mystical with this whole idea that our thoughts in some mysterious way can actually change the physical world around us. That's where it starts to get a little edgy, okay? And, you know, there's a very popular book and a movie that was wildly popular several years ago called The Secret. Even the title of the book and the movie is kind of gets your attention. The Secret. And it talked about this thing called the law of attraction. And they referred to it as some sort of a, you know, a dictum of the universe, you know, that it was part of natural law, you know, and so that our thoughts could actually have something to do with our environment, change it. So what I'm finding out here as I go deeper into the research is that one truth that we cannot ignore, that there are really terrible and ugly realities in life that are literally beyond our control. And if we'll, you know, ask ourselves or quiz ourselves at the heart of hearts, you know, we know that that's true. There are some realities that are just beyond our control. So even here in America, where we're at the heart of positive thinking, there is a great deal of an undercurrent of constant anxiety. And so these so-called coaches or trainers of this, you know, mind control discipline, you know, whether they're church evangelists or whether they're self-help book authors or financial gurus, what they do is they wind up instructing their disciples, you know, to push through all of the contradicting evidence that's in front of them, that's negative, and they say they should do it by a deliberate self-hypnosis, even going as far as to call it self-deception, if necessary, in order to block out any negative thinking of any kind.
Well, let me stop you here before we pursue this, because you mentioned a lot of stuff there, and this is partly why it's relevant for us to be talking about this here on the Laura Murphy Show. I mean, besides the obvious that by definition, whatever Carlson and I talk about, it's going to be on the Laura Murphy Show. But this is relevant to the financial sector in particular. So, yes, in general, there's been this movement for a while. And then Carlson's, you know, tracing it back to the 1800s of, taking control of your destiny. And, hey, if there's a problem in your life, it's your fault, and or you have the power to fix it. You have the responsibility to fix it. Don't blame me. And so you can see how a lot of this sounds, you know, like good advice. You know, don't just throw up your hands in resignation. If there's something you don't like about your reality, then you do something about it. Gosh darn, don't just be a whiner. And you can see how, again, not only that it sounds plausible and correct, but it's distinctly American, that sort of attitude that, hey, we're can do. And, we don't need handouts from other people, and we're going to go fix things and build it ourselves. So you can see where this is coming from and why many aspects of it seem to be pretty healthy in terms of psychological motivations or what have you. And as you're mentioning, Carlos, this is really big now in the financial sector, but it's been around for a while. Like if people saw the movie The Founder about Ray Kroc, and, you know, Michael Keaton plays him, the guy who ended up expanding the McDonald's, you know, the actual McDonald's brothers, you know, had their own restaurant, and then he saw the vision and spread it across the country. And I loved in the beginning of that. I mean, I like the whole movie. I could watch Michael Keaton doing his laundry. I'd pay to see that for 2 hours. But in the beginning, he's in a hotel room and he's a failed salesman. You know, he's on the brink. He just keeps having one harebrained scheme after another. But what keeps him going in this movie is, and I'm guessing this is probably true of the actual Ray Kroc, was in the hotel room, he's an alcoholic. He's, you know, he's drinking all kinds of hard liquor just to get to sleep at night to put the anxiety down. But he also plays this record of a self-motivational guru, you know, just saying, you know, positive thoughts, you can do it. You know, you have the ability to, and because if you're a salesman or a saleswoman, don't want to be sexist, I mean, you got to have confidence. If you doubt yourself, it's not going to work. So you really got to just banish those demons in whatever way you think might work, and get out there and just know you're going to sell that product.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I know we've got a lot of financial professionals out there that are listening to this podcast as well, and they're very familiar with this. But at the same time, I'm trying to speak to some of these farther outer reaches of this thing and how, you know, how it pushes it to such extremes, you know, that it's almost like you can wish something to happen and it materializes. And that if it doesn't, it's because, well, maybe you didn't have enough faith or you didn't try hard enough, you know, that sort of thing. And so it's a touchy subject because I have to admit that I've been a very positive thinker all my life. In fact, you mentioned religion a little while ago, Bob. My whole hope and faith from a religious perspective is closely aligned with positive thinking. But here's a surprising thing, Bob, is that when I went deeper in this research, what I found out is that it could have never come into being, this whole new thought, this whole new mind cure thing, without it having been intertwined with religion. In fact, it was Protestantism, and specifically of the Calvinistic type, that indirectly gave rise to this new thought movement, this mind cure, way back in 1820. So I think the article I'm writing, and we should, I guess, talk about it the same way in the podcast, it's not to be judgmental about any of this or be critical about it, because, you know, after all, you know, what else can we be if not positive? You know, we smile. Of course we smile because the world smiles with us. I mean, but it is important to state that an alternative to positive thinking is not necessarily despair. I think we can say that caution and realism are also invaluable in a world that, you know, at the same time, it's dangerous and it's also full of opportunity. And using caution and realism are are things that we should always temper this positive thinking with. So it needs to come in as a form of stabilizer. The problem is that we have so many people now believing that the world is no longer as dangerous as we might thought that it was, you see. So when the movement originally started way back in 1820, there was this idea that the universe was just constant supply and abundance, and that it was supply and abundance was made available to everybody by a very benevolent, you know, God. You know, these were the early beginnings of this whole movement. And so if we just lay down some of the facts in this research, you know, we can let each individual make up his own mind what they think about it. But this is the kind of thing that it's uncovering for me. It's a fascinating study because at its farthest extremes, you know, this positive thinking movement, as you said, Bob, has gone into the business world, into marketing, into entrepreneurship. You know, and after all, these are some of the underpinnings of our free markets and free enterprise system. And so it's an important subject, one that needs to be fleshed out, because when you go deep into it, it does have a dark side.
Well, let me push you a little bit here, because I'm still trying to sort through all this myself. As I say, there's a lot superficially in what these people are, and you know, they're all individuals and they have different perspectives. I don't mean to lump everybody in the same thing, but there's a lot from this movement, let's call it, or this perspective that I think is better than perhaps what a lot of people just routinely believe. And so you could see why, oh, maybe you should be exposed to it. So for example, when I was younger, probably during my atheist phase, I was like a materialist. I thought, nope, that's what it is. And, you know, all these people talking about mind over body and psychosomatic illnesses, that's just a bunch of hooey. And then I, you know, went through some stuff in grad school where I realized like how powerful the mind was, and that like and that's when I understood how there could be such thing as, you know, faith healings and things, that if somebody could be, you know, if you genuinely believe that you had been cured or something, I was now more open to the idea that medically speaking, like some agnostic doctor with a degree from Harvard Medical School could come and examine you and say, yep, that condition's been cleared up now. I don't know how, but, you know, we didn't give him drugs, so something happened. And the guy would say, yeah, it's because now, you know, I believed I was cured. So I'm just saying, when I was younger, I thought that was a complete hooey. And now I'm, you know, through seeing things or whatever, I'm much more open to the idea. And just something as simple as saying, well, yeah, my mind controls matter. Look, if I want to go pick up that cup with my hand, watch this. Look at that. Wow, I'm making my hand move through space and it's grasping this cup, and I'm manipulating matter just through my mind control. And that seems silly. We're like, oh, that's not what we mean. But if you were never, you know, through firsthand experience, or if that just wasn't a commonplace thing where people, if they want to go do something, can make their bodies move, you know, that would be a miracle. We would just like, whoa, how are you doing that? That's science fiction or whatever. That looks magic. But we just take it for granted. So there is, you know, this idea that the whole mind-body connection, I mean, that is some weird, difficult stuff that the best minds are still grappling with. And if you're religious, you're going to say it involves the soul and all sorts of things. So in the context of all that stuff, Carlos, I'm wondering, are these people perhaps tapping into things that are there that the secular, sort of scientific materialist mindset is missing, but you're saying they're drawing the wrong conclusion from it? Like, to see people walking on coals and stuff like that, I mean, I think, you know, alarm bells go off and we're like, yeah, something's not right here. Something's kind of screwier. And so can you just, I realize I'm rambling here. Is it because there's a lot of different things going on, and it's, I wonder if it's a pretty subtle perspective here where we're saying there's a lot of things they're touching on that are the conventional narrative that you're going to get is from the, you know, secular materialist perspective is wrong, but yet where you might end up taking this is also the wrong destination.
Well, you know, and you know, as you can tell, Bob, just with us talking about it, it's interesting stuff. Let me talk to you a little bit about some of the resources that I use. And I want to talk about one in particular right now because of what you're asking me. And this was probably, there were two main books that I selected for my main research. One of them was recently written by, I hope I pronounced her name right, Barbara Ehrenreich. But anyway, she wrote a book, I think it's in 2009, called Bright Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. Now, she's a very successful author. She's had a couple of bestseller books, and she writes on very controversial subjects, so I can see why she picked this one. But anyway, what happened to this Barbara Ehrenreich is that she fell victim to cancer, and it was in that experience that she got exposed to this positive thinking movement. And I'm going to quote exactly how she describes it, okay? And she says, "What it gave me, if you want to call it a gift, was a very personal and agonizing encounter with an ideological force in American culture that I had not been aware of before, one that encourages us to deny reality, submit cheerfully to misfortune, and blame only ourselves for our fate," end of quote. And this is how she came in contact with this overpowering positive thinking movement while she was sick with cancer. And after having experienced this, she was equipped to write about it and did the research that I'm looking into right now, going all the way back to 1820s, but she brought it up to modern times, and she, in essence, took aim on two of the most prominent leaders of the positive thinking movement today. And one of them was Tony Robbins, who you may or may not know. He started out with infomercials at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning when he first started, and now he's like the guru to CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. But here's a guy that actually makes you walk on fire just to prove the power of the thing that you were just talking about, Bob, mind control. So she takes aim on him, talks a lot about that. The other guy she picks out is this fellow by the name of Joel Osteen, who is the current leader of what is known as the prosperity gospel. Now, this is a guy that speaks to millions of people week after week. And what he's espousing is that God wants you to be rich. So he's accumulating a lot of people that want to be rich, you see. So this encounter with cancer that this author had, you know, is making her describe some of how this thing has just gone overboard. And calling attention to these two guys in particular. Now, she goes even further as a finale in her book to say that it destroyed the American economy by what she called hedge fund disease. And there she was specifically talking about the 2008 financial crisis. And that she's talking about bankers, you know, big bankers, the too big to fail outfits and that sort of thing. And she said that they were caught up with the symptoms of this positive thinking movement, which she called megalomania, which is an obsession with the exercise of power, especially in the domination of others, combined with a little narcissism, which is excessive interest in oneself and one's physical appearance, and adding to it a little solipsism, which is the view or theory that the self is all that can be known to exist. So it's like saying that if you're worth $500 million, how can you be wrong about anything? You know, to think something is to make it happen. It's kind of like you're God, you see. So So this is where we are in current times and in more recent times since the financial crisis, according to this particular author, and where this positive thinking movement has just gone awry.
Well, again, you bring up a lot of stuff there. Why don't we just spend a minute here? Joel Osteen. I see a lot of Christians who I listen to will either name him, but you know, by name, or will refer to, allude to him, and you know who they're talking about. And so, why don't we? I haven't looked at him much. The one time I actually sat down and listened to one of his deal, or I wasn't sitting down. I was in a gym in my apartment complex when I lived in Nashville, and I was, you know, you get the TVs up in the corner there, and you're flipping through to put something on. And it was like CNN and Fox News were just talking about whatever the latest crazy thing was, and I just couldn't take it. And so I'm flipping through, and then it was one of Joel Osteen's sermons, and I had that on while I was working out, and it was a great workout because he got me so excited and pumped up. It was great. And so what is the concern? I mean, is it that he's saying, and maybe you're not as familiar with him as well, but just the idea that, I mean, because clearly he's, you know, he points to scriptures or whatever that in isolation, it looks like, oh yeah, God's promising us all sorts of things, you know, for his children and so on. And is it just that he's only giving you part of the story, and he's setting people up for disappointment? Because then if they don't end up having their income go up 30% next year, they're going to worry that, oh, does that mean because I didn't have enough faith? And is that what the main problem is with that?
Well, I think it's the crowds that these people are attracting. The title of my article is called "The American Quest for Health, Wealth, and Individual Power." And when you think about it, these are things that are desired, I guess, by everybody in one sense or another. You know, the selfish interest is in all of us. And so these two individuals, this particular author is saying, are the guys that are leading the pack in terms of this positive thinking movement right now. And they look at them as though they've tapped into some secret, and that if they can just learn the steps to the secret, you know, they can also gain all these wonderful things like health, wealth, and individual power. I mean, that's really what's at the heart of it. And of course, you and I are always taught to follow the money, Bob. And of course, there's an enormous amount of money. I mean, this is I can't remember exact dollar amount, but this is a multi-billion dollar industry, this positive thinking movement, because it has, as I said, it's gone into business. It's gone into entrepreneurship. It's gone into marketing. It's a huge industry. So it's just a fascinating subject. Again, understanding how it all came about is interesting. My best source, Bob, was a guy by the name of Donald Meyer, who wrote a book back in the 1960s called "The Positive Thinkers: Religion as Pop Psychology from Mary Baker Eddy to Oral Roberts." And it is a fascinating piece of work, extremely well researched, just going into all his references and everything. I mean, this guy has done some serious study on this and really is the main source. I had difficulty finding out who Donald Meyer was until I accidentally stumbled upon an interview that somebody did of this fella when he was 91, and that was in 2014. But turns out that Donald Meyer is a doctor of history from Harvard. So he's a stout academic. He taught at UCLA for several years and then retired from Wesleyan College in Connecticut. But I mean, he has done a serious study on this, and it's making for a very interesting research for me. I'm about ready to write article number two on this, and I'm going to be taking in not only a gentleman by the name of Quimby, which is a name that is at the beginning of this, but also this woman by the name of Mary Baker Eddy. And I'll also be talking about individuals like Dale Carnegie, who wrote a very famous book called How to Win Friends and Influence People that was immensely popular. I'll be talking about Napoleon Hill, who wrote a classic book back in the 1930s, Think and Grow Rich, which has sold millions of copies. There's also an individual by the name of Norman Vincent Peale, who was a pastor that became extremely popular with the positive thinking movement, Billy Graham, Oral Roberts. So it's a fascinating study. But this is how it developed over the period of time. And what we have today is positive thinking. And so when I get into article number two, I think everybody should, those that are subscribers to the LMR will like the remaining part of this particular series.
And here I'm just thinking positively that the other people will subscribe. They will subscribe. They will subscribe. If I think it, it'll happen. Well, we're probably past time here, but why don't we end with one big, I'll give you one final question here, Carlos. And I understand it's perhaps a bit unfair because you're trying to say, look, you're just giving people information and letting them come to their own conclusions. But yet along the way, you were sneaking things in there saying like there's some danger here. So suppose we've got somebody listening who says, you know, for years I was banging my head against the wall. I'm in sales. I just wasn't getting, I was eating ramen noodles and whatever. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to make the utility payment. And then I got this book by so-and-so, or then I started going to these seminars or whatever. And I just learned a set of techniques. And now, you know, I wake up in the morning, I go through these techniques. And before I go to sleep at night, I go through these techniques. And I'm telling you, the results speak for themselves. And so are you telling me, Carlos Lara, that I'm playing with fire here and I need to drop this stuff? Or are you just telling me I should be aware of the or what are you telling me, Carlos? Are you saying this is bad stuff? So suppose we got someone thinking like that.
Okay, well, I think what I am trying to tell everybody is that I knew a man personally who bought into this big time. And in my opinion, he perfected the science of it. And his goal, because he grew up in poverty, his goal was to be wealthy. And it worked. When he passed away in March, he owned three residences. One in New York City, which is where he passed away in his New York apartment that was decorated by one of the top designers. So it was a monumental piece there in New York. He had a house in Paris, and he had a house here in Nashville that it's a replica of this hotel in Paris, France, that was built in the 1700s, an absolutely beautiful structure. So when he passed, just before he passed away last October, he gave away, I think it was something like several pieces of art to a museum in France that were worth $350 million. I mean, this man actually, I used to think he had self-hypnotized himself, Bob, and he achieved his goal. Now, if that's what you're after, I'm saying you can self-hypnotize yourself to do that. There is such a thing, if that's what you're after. In his case, I see that he got what he wanted. But there are people, for example, this Barbara, this author that I mentioned who had cancer. You see what I mean? There's some things that you can think as positively as you want, and you're still going to die. So it has its limits, is what I'm saying. And so we've got to temper it. Do you understand? There has to be some way to keep this moderated, balance, so to speak. Caution and realism are important in the kind of world we live in.
Okay, well, you just said a nice thing there. Maybe we can, is it fair to say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if somebody says, so what's your problem, Carlos? You're saying you're against positive thinking. would you say that, well, you're not counseling despair or negative thinking, but you're counseling realistic thinking, and you're saying, isn't it better to be a realist than a positivist?
Yeah, I'm just saying there's an alternative to positive thinking, and it's not necessarily despair. You know, it's just not always despair, you know. You're not being pessimistic. You're more or less being cautious and realistic. And I think that's important.
Okay. And also the way you put it in the last few remarks there, that just like you could say, hey, I got to go do something that's scary and whatever. And if some professional hypnotist offered and said, well, you know, if you want, I can put you under and then you can go do this scary thing while you're hypnotized. Do you want to do that? And you say, oh, okay. And then you go and whatever, clean out the shed. And even though there's spiders all over the place and you just get through it and you're done. And then the guy snaps his fingers and you come out of it and you're like, oh, wow, that was great. But realizing that potential was there, you certainly wouldn't want to go through your life having hypnotized yourself. I think most people would say, oh, that's kind of creepy. And so even if it was like, you know, I'm really afraid of going up to that door or having that cold call and trying to sell this financial product, and you know, and then the hypnotist says, well, if you want, I can put you under and then you'll be able to conquer that fear. But yet you're doing it as, you know, under hypnosis, that, you know, some people might say, well, gee, that works in quotation marks. But do you really want to go through life like that? So I guess there's that element as well, that if really what's going on is you're literally hypnotizing yourself, even just saying that, is that really what, you know, what you want to do?
Right, right. And, you know, this kind of thing can so easily get attached to get rich quick schemes, you know. And you know how we're always talking about IBC to the point that people will say, oh, my gosh, this is too good to be true. But we're very, you know, we're very sincere about this. This is not magic we're talking about. You know, IBC is not magic. You know, we don't want to mislead people. So that's all I'm saying, is that this type of positive thinking, when it gets to these farther extremes, you know, where you got an obstacle that just really, you know, can't be moved, but your coach is telling you, well, you know, just push through it, transcend past it, as though it doesn't even exist. You know, well, that's a little ridiculous. You know, some things just are not going to move.
Okay, when one of those things is the clock, we cannot deny the fact that we're way over time for this episode, so let's wrap it up. Remember, folks, if you are in the Nashville area, that I'm going to be there, and Carlos and I are going to put on an evening dinner presentation on July 11th. We're in the year 2017. And then if you can't make that one, there's a breakfast seminar the next day on July 12th in the morning. For more information, go to the show notes page for this particular episode of the podcast. Again, this is episode 41. So you'll go to laramurphy.com. That's LARA-Murphy.com. And on the top tab there, you'll see choices. If Carlos has intrigued you and you want to learn more about this topic, then check out the Laura Murphy Report, and you can subscribe to that. There's sample issues and so on, so you can go in knowing what you're going to get. That's also at the website, of course. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will see you next time.
You've just finished another episode of the Laura Murphy Show. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues to do your part in building the 10%.
The Laura Murphy Show is provided with the understanding that the staff and contributors of LauraMurphy.com are not herein engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult your own professional tax, legal, or financial advisor.